I'm hopefully I can manage this high-tech technology here. Instead of preaching, I'm going to try to use PowerPoint tonight, and so hopefully you'll be able to follow along with me. We want to talk tonight, before we just go ahead and read the scripture. Jeremiah says in the 8th chapter in verse 22, as he observes the people of his day and time, and after observing the people and the condition of God's people, he inquires of God, is there no balm? Is there no ointment? Is there no medicine? Is there anything that we can do to help bring God's people back to him? Tonight, I want to introduce you for just a little bit to discovering the status of the American family. The family is a very emotional and very touchy part for me. And the American family tonight is in trouble. And what I want to do is to try to give you a snapshot. The little time that I have is a snapshot picture of the American family. But I don't want to leave you just there. After I give you a snapshot of the American family, I want to suggest a few things that we can do to try to restore the family that I remember when I was a little boy, that I can remember from the 50s when America was in the golden age. And then the 60s occurred, and the changes in America started occurring. And since the 60s, the family has been in a period of deterioration. And so tonight, what I want to do is to try to help you see the condition of the American family and what can we do to help restore the families that used to be. So the goal tonight is to highlight several significant changes that, from my perspective, that have occurred in the family. And then, after we talk about these changes, I want to share with you God's suggestion on what we can do to restore it. But let me share with you two observations. The first observation is this. Psychologists and social psychologists would have you believe that what the family is experiencing right now is just change. That like anything, change is occurring. But I don't believe the family is changing. I believe the family is in a state of deterioration. I don't believe we're just experiencing change with time. I believe that what we're experiencing in the family is serious than just change. The second observation, biblical history clearly conveys that those nations that forget God will suffer some consequences. All we have to do is look in the Bible. All we have to do is look at history. Those nations who had weak families, it's just a matter of time, those nations collapse. America's a great nation, but America's in trouble tonight. And if we don't do something to restore the family, I'm not a prophet, nor am I a son of a prophet, but America's going to see some tough years, some tough days. If we don't rise up and speak up as to what can we do to bring the family back, then I remember just 50 years ago. And so, the Solomon saith this in Proverbs 14, verse 34. You're familiar with the text that righteousness, what exalts a nation, what really makes a nation great? It's not money. It's not military power. What makes a nation great is when a nation has God in its family. What makes a nation great is when a nation is committed to serving God. And we have become a nation that is turning her back on God. We have become a nation while other than the family, the most important institution of all the institutions in America, the family is the foundation of any society. And our family, the institution, is in trouble. And what I want to do tonight is to try to help you to see that. But it says righteousness, righteous living. Righteousness simply in this Hebrew text here just means simply doing right. Doing right. That's how you make a nation great. And America is deviated from that. But then he says sin is a disgrace. What would bring a nation down? A powerful nation, a wealthy nation? Immorality. A nation that forgets God is on a road to destruction. Look at what the psalmist said. In Psalms 9, verse 17, the wicked shall be turned into hell, even all nations. All nations that forget God. 40 years ago, I decided that I wanted to be a gospel preacher. The reason I decided I wanted to be a gospel preacher It's because at the age of 15, I saw things going on in my community that disturbed me. I saw things going on in the community, and I said, God, even at a young age, a teenager, 15 years of age, God, I want to make a difference. How can I make a difference? I said, I'll be a preacher. And I went off to college, and I studied Bible. But then when I graduated from Freed Hardeman, I still wanted to make a difference, and so I decided to go into counseling because I wanted to help people put their lives back together, and I wanted to help families to be strong, and especially in the black community. And tonight, I want to show you some statistical facts, regardless of race, but particularly in the black community, the family's in trouble. And I'm trying to do what I can to help restore the family. Because if we don't have strong families, we're not going to have strong communities. If you don't have strong communities, you're not going to have strong churches. If you don't have strong churches, you're not going to have a strong nation. And we're in trouble. But I have the answer. I have the answer. But before I share with you the answer, I've got to let you see the condition of the American society. The weeping prophet. Around the age of 18, God came to Jeremiah and said, Jeremiah, I want you to go and prophesy to my people. And Jeremiah, at the age of 18, imagine a young man, 16 to 18 years of age. And God said, before you preach to these people, I want you to go and observe them. I want you to survey of my people. And so Jeremiah walked among God's people for several months, made him weep. America, a nation that I love. When I see the lives and I see families that are saying, God, how did we get here to where we are now and where we're heading? If you're a police officer, you know what I'm talking about. If you're a school teacher, you know what I'm if you are talking about. All you have to do is look in any given society, and our families are deteriorating. Jeremiah, look at the first thing he saw. He came back after observing God's people. He said, God's people have committed two evils. He said, Sammy, the first thing I saw is that they forgot God. Can a maid forget her ornaments? Can a bride forget her attire? Yet my people have forgotten me days without number. Jeremiah 2 and verse 32. How many weddings have you gone to where a bride forgot to put her gown on? You just don't forget things that are important. In Jeremiah 2, verse 13, he said, they have put their trust in cisterns. Those are wells. But you know what? One problem with the well? It had a hole in it. It had a crack in it. And what has happened in America is that we have turned from God and we've put our trust in M-O-N-E-Y. You talk to any kid, 16, 17 years of age, all they want to do is make money because they believe money has the answer to everything. And that's why a kid that's 7 years old will walk up to you with a gun, jack you, shoot you, and kill you. Mad crave for money. No values. They're just on a pursuit of pleasure and money. Jeremiah said that's what he saw. People who have forgotten God and put their trust in money and themselves. Look in Jeremiah 30. And what you see there, they began to celebrate sin. That they're ruled by their own means, and guess what? My people love to have it so. People don't want to hear the truth when they go to church. That's why we have a diversity of these community churches who are emerging in America. Anything goes, a buffet. Whatever you want to believe, you can believe. Because what matters is that you're happy. And we're going to have preachers who will preach anything you want to hear. Jeremiah said that's what he saw among God's people. Prophets who had forsaken preaching the truth, preaching God's word, start preaching what the people wanted to hear. Now look in Jeremiah chapter 6. And look at verse 15. In Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 15, he says, Sammy, the people had gotten so that when they committed such diabolical acts, they didn't even blush. You know, think about it. When a man can sneak into the bedroom of his own daughter at night and bring no shame. When people can commit sin that used to just make your hair stand up on your arms, or on your back. Judah had become a nation where they could commit sins and it didn't bother them. for a man to take his fist and beat his wife. It didn't bother. For a kid that's 5 years old to cuss and use profanity and degrade and steal. It doesn't bother them. That's what America has become. That we have people who can commit things. It's no big deal. I remember a time when a girl got pregnant that she had to leave town. I remember a time when divorce was frowned on. I remember a time when there were things that were right and there were things that were wrong. I remember that. But America's become a nation where things that are right are laughed at and things that are wrong are praised. And if it's this way now, what is it going to be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I don't see a change. You know why? Because the family is not doing what it's supposed to do. Moms and dads are not doing what they're supposed to do. And because they're not doing that, teachers who have their years in are retiring. They don't want to raise our children because they're not there to learn. They're not there to learn. I was telling in the Bible class last night, a young man was teaching. We're having VBS. He's talking about this man that was breaking in someone's home. And when he broke into the home, the garage door, somehow when he got in it, it sealed him into the carport. And because of that, they were gone for several days. When they finally came home and caught him there, he turned around and sued the owners because he couldn't get out of the house, and he won. That's how sick America has become. What can we do? Jeremiah said, and look in Jeremiah 6, verse 16. In Jeremiah 6, verse 16, they had lost their desire to please God. When you have a nation that is not concerned about pleasing God, you're in trouble. And God said, Jeremiah, go out and plead with the people to come back and walk in the old path and walk in the old way. Beg them to come back. Here's a father. Have you ever seen a parent beg the children to do something right? Have you ever seen a wife begging a husband to get right? Or a husband begging a wife to get right? Here's God begging Israel, please come back. Israel, I love you. Israel, don't do this. Please, Jeremiah, plead with them. And you know what they said? We don't want to come back. God, we like it. We like what we're doing. We don't want to come back. We will not walk in the old path. We don't want to come back to the old way. We like the lifestyle. And that's why Jeremiah says in Jeremiah 8, verse 22, God, is there anything that we can do? God, is there anything that we can do? I've seen the people. They're so far gone from you, God, that there's no desire to serve you in their minds. God, is there anything we can do? Jeremiah 9, verse 1. He says, oh, if my head was water. Oh, if my eyes were a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. Jeremiah loved his nation. Jeremiah loved his people. And he pleaded with them to come back, but you know what? They wouldn't. And as a result, the nation from the north came down and put them into captivity. All because they would not turn. God loves America because God has blessed America over the years. But how long is God going to allow America to treat him this way? The day is going to come, I don't know when, that God is going to pull back his arms of protection and love for this great nation. What's going to happen to America? I don't know. But there's hope. We're not doomed yet. And that's why I want to help us to see where America is now. And what can we do to restore America? God knew that something like this could happen. Before he allowed the Israelites to go into the promised land, he told Moses to call all the parents together. They were making preparation to go into the promised land, and they had been released out of bondage. And he said, Moses, call all the parents and grandparents together. I need to talk to them, and I want to talk through you to them. And he said, beware that you don't forget the Lord thy God. When you get into this land flowing with milk and honey, when everything you touch began to prosper, don't forget the Lord thy God. Teach your children. Teach them about me. Teach them what I've done for them. Give them, help them to have a passion and want to serve me. I'm so thankful to God that my parents and my grandmother Naomi. I'm so grateful that growing up in the summertime in Houston, Mississippi with my grandmother Naomi and Amos, that they put in me to want to serve, teach me. And that's my job to pass that on to my boys, is to want to go to heaven, to want to please God, to say there are things you can't do, and you don't do them because you've been taught better. But we don't have parents doing that in this young generation. We don't have parents doing that. And because we have stopped as parents doing what God has told us to do, we're now about to reap the whirlwind. God told them to do that. And they did this for years. And all of a sudden, there rose a generation that stopped doing it. Look in Judges 2, verse 10. One of the saddest verses in all the Old Testament is that there arose a nation that didn't know God. You know why? Because somebody stopped telling them about God. Someone stopped telling them about pleasing God. My son, my middle son, Jared, teaches Bible in a public school. Don't tell him. You know, they'll sue. But don't. I'm not going to tell you where. But he's a history teacher. But they allow him to teach Old Testament survey and a New Testament survey. And in teaching Old Testament survey, he said, Dad, I'm teaching kids in 11th and 12th grade, and they don't even know the story about Jonah, Samson, let alone Genesis that God created. They don't know any of the Bible stories. The book that we used to read to him when he was 5 years old is the book that he's teaching these kids about God. We have a nation of young people that don't know God. So how can you serve him? How can you have a passion to serve God when you don't know God? He said, Dad, they don't know God. My oldest son, Eric, is a principal at a school. 96% of the kids come from a single-parent home. 96%. Well, there's no daddy. There's no daddy. And I'm going to show you some results of a daddy not being in a home. Where are we going to be 5 years from now? For the past five decades, the family has been declining. And so what I want to do tonight, and I know I've got a few minutes, is look at some changes, significant changes, and then God's perspective on them, and then I'll close with a few suggestions of what we can do. The first one, increase in single-parent homes. The increase in single-parent families. Here, look at the facts. In 1950, 7% of the American homes in America had a single parent. 7% had two parents in them in 1950, the golden years. But then look, 1970s, 12%. 1980, 20%. 1990, today, one-third. 37% of all homes in America are headed by a single parent. Where are the daddies? Where are the daddies? I'm thankful my dad taught me to be responsible. I'm glad my dad taught me to stay there when it gets rough, Sam. You don't walk away from your family. It's not the government job to raise my children. That's my job. Taught some things. And that's my job to teach my boys. But we have a generation where they're not being taught. And that's the result of it. Now look at it by race. 32% of African-American homes have two parents in it. 60 single parent. 68%. Then why do you think that even though African-American make up only 13% of the American population, they make up 65% of the prison population? Why? There's nobody so. I'm not a Freudian. I don't even respect Sigmund Freud. But Sigmund Freud said something. He says about personality. He says in order for a person to be a full person, you need three components in the personality. The id, the ego. You're born with two of them. The id is just want pleasures. That's that part that just wants stuff. The ego is the rational part of you. It tells you how to go about getting it. It doesn't tell you what's right or wrong. It just tells you that, Sammy, you want money still, but you got to wait till people are not there. That's the rational part. But then there's the superego. The superego is what your parents give you. It tells you that, Sammy, you're not supposed to steal because it's wrong. You're not supposed to steal because God doesn't want you to do that. You're not supposed to steal because you can go to prison. Suppose you have parents that hadn't given. You know why kids are killing one another? They don't have a superego. We're raising a nation of kids. Those homes are more likely to be filled with poverty because, and that's nothing wrong with being responsibility of a dad to stay there and to raise their children and not. That's not my joke on Rhonda because we can't agree and be selfish. Raise those boys. In 1960, 500,000 people reported. We're talking about reported. Now, these numbers could easily be doubled. But these are the people who report each year that they're shacking up, they're cohabitating. And it increased to 5.5. In 2010, 7.1 million people, and they were not married. I was a million. Marriage is no longer honored in America. It's declining. We're not teaching our children the sanctity of marriage. And people are shacking up, living with no commitment, and it's no big deal in America. The sanctity of marriage don't teach. They're not going to practice. Plead with who cohabitate. They can't go to heaven. There are new whoremongers, adulterers. Those people cohabitating cannot enter into the kingdom of God. Homosexuality. The percentage of people who classify themselves as gay, homosexual, lesbian, or bisexual has increased in the last 5 years tremendously in America. Look at the facts. In 1950, 97% of Americans reported that they were heterosexual. In 1990, 89%. 13% of Americans classify themselves as either being gay, lesbian, or homosexual. I would say that's probably even higher than that. And then we just had a president to say there's nothing wrong with it. Brothers and sisters, that's wrong. Homosexuality is a sin. You can't dress it up. You're not born that way. You're not born that way. People say, well, why? Why is it that we have so many people who are homosexual today than we did years ago? Let me share with you why. This is my perspective, and I believe I can support it. You're born asexual, just like you're born with an appetite. What you eat it depends upon your culture. If you grew up in India, guess what you're not going to eat? A McDonald's hamburger. Okay? You know why? That's against your culture. But you're born with an appetite. What you eat depends upon your culture. My wife, she was reared not far from, right, you know, from where I grew up. But there's a dish she loves because her parents said it was all right. It's called chitlins. I don't know if you've ever had that. I hope you haven't. But if you have, shame on you. But she loves them. Hot sauce, she thinks, if you put hot sauce on that, she said, it'll make your old expression want to be your mom. I said, if you put some on my plate, I'm going to slap somebody's mama. Okay? Okay. But the point is this. I don't eat that because I wasn't socialized. My parents, like, it's not in my repertoire. You're born asexual. You're born with a sex drive. It's up to parents to teach that little boy or that little girl. It's a choice. You're not born heterosexual. You're not born homosexual. You have to be taught the sexual orientation. But suppose you haven't been taught that little boys are supposed to like little boys. I mean little girls. Help me get that right, because we're on radio. Suppose you haven't been taught that little boys are supposed to like little girls. Then around the age of 9 to 12, you're going to experiment. It is normal to experiment and to wonder of the biological differences. And if you haven't been taught, then you can grow up with those tendencies. thinking that you have a preference for that. And once it becomes crystallized in the mind, you're going to act out on that. You're not born. That's why parents have to teach. Again, in the African-American community, make up 13% of the American population. But black males are more likely to be homosexual than white males. Why? The absence of the father and the home. It is up to the parents to teach little boys. Then they are left with no guidance to be whatever they want to be, rather than being what God would have them to be. 13%, I would say, decline of the number of people in singlehood is increasing. In 1950s, in the 50s, over 97% of Americans who were at the age of 18 were planning on getting married. 1970, we started seeing decline in the percentage of people who wanted to get married. Look at this. In 2010, 51% of people in America over the age of 18 were married. I know people are waiting longer to get married. 27 is becoming, 28 is the average age. But that was a time when people who were over the age of 18 or even 28, people still don't want to get married. And for the first time this year, at the end of 2012, they said that's going to be 49%. What's going on? People in America don't want to get married. Marriage is no longer considered something that a boy or girl want to be. Why? Here's a reason why. Cohabitation. They would shack up, then get married. The high divorce rate. They don't value marriage. And the increase of homosexuality in America are contributing to people not wanting to walk down the aisle and say, I do. Not wanting to make a commitment. And with that, again, it's undermining the sanctity of the home. Birth outside of marriage. 44% of all babies born in America are born outside of marriage. 44%. Look at by race. Before we get to that, look at this. And what disturbs me here, this I know this is dated, it's 6 years old. But in 2006, look at the second bullet. 20% of those girls and boys between the age of 14 and 17 who participated in this survey reported they had been sexually active with at least four. Not that 60-some% of them are sexually active. We know our children are sexually active. But look at how many, before the age of 17, multiple partners. Number one, they ought not to be engaging in it. But now, it's like, it's no big deal. It's recreation. I'm so thankful that my parents taught me that this is something you don't do. I'm so thankful that my grandmother, Naomi, pleaded with me. This is something you don't do. And as three boys, that's my job to encourage them that this is something that you keep. But you got to be taught. You got to be taught. I remember the first time we had to talk to our oldest son about sex. And he was 2 years old. And he was in the kitchen, and we were in there doing something. He said he wanted to marry his best friend, Stevie. Eric, you can't marry Stevie. Dad, I want to marry Stevie. You can't marry Stevie. Rhonda, explain to that boy why he can't marry Stevie. I am so thankful that he's married. He's married to Megan. Babies born outside of marriage. 74% of all Hispanic babies in America are born outside of marriage. 72% of all African-American babies are born outside of marriage. Need I say any more? 36% of white babies, 28% of Asian babies are born outside of marriage. We're having children who are not ready for marriage having babies. And they're not ready to socialize them to be good citizens. And therefore, we have a generation of babies having babies, and they have not socialized what our parents did to us and our grandparents did to us, rather than the superego. They have no concept of God, And there's no wonder a kid 9 years old will shoot you and then get on national television and grin because they don't care about the consequences, because they're not afraid of anything. They don't care about anything. They don't respect anybody. And when a person will cuss out grandmama, what, how are you going to reason with a person like that? When a person would tell mom what she can do and how fat, what can I say to them? You try to encourage them to come to church, they have no sense of God. Why am I going to serve that God? What has he done to me? Who is God? And we keep on this track, where are we headed? Let me close. Violence in the home. Let's get to our last one here. Number 7. Because that's what I want to close with. Technologies. The failure of the family to serve several vital functions for society. As I mentioned, there are 5 institutions. There are 5 institutions that determine whether society is strong or not. Religion, government, education, economy, and the family. And when these institutions are strong in a nation, you're going to have a strong nation. Look at America. And all 5 of those, they're in trouble. All 5 of them. So what does that say? I'm not a prophet, nor am I a son of a prophet. I see a nation that's powerful and wealthy that's on a road to collapse. If you've been to Europe, you've seen America. Go back 200 years ago. Europe had churches, cathedrals all over. 400 years ago, Europe was a nation that believed in God. Go there now, you see some of the most beautiful buildings that are vacant. Vacant. They don't even believe in God anymore. America's headed to that road. Why? Number 5. They're not doing the job of teaching their children about God. And when kids don't know about God, they don't care about the society rules. They don't care about the government. And they don't care about you, and they don't care about me. That's where America's headed. America's in trouble. So what can we do? I'll leave this with you. One thing we can do, we can pray. I believe in prayer. And if there was a time, before you go to bed tonight, you pray for the family. Jeremiah was a weeping prophet because of what he saw. And that man preached his heart. Israel said, we don't want to come back. I'm concerned about our nation. And I'm concerned about the family. And I would want my granddaughter, Riley, to have the family that I can remember that I grew up in. We sat and we prayed at our dinner table. We ate together. And grandmom and granddaddy told us stories about God and how God has helped them. I don't see that going on in a lot of homes today. And for that, in Revelation chapter 12, verse 12, John saw the future. And John said, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, for Satan has come down. Knowing he has only a short time, Satan knows his days are numbered. But Satan is on a mission, people. He's been cast out of heaven. He tried to stop the birth of the man-child. He couldn't. And so he went after the woman, the church. And the way that Satan can destroy the church is to destroy families. When families are weak, you know, it's just a matter of time. They're going to quit going to church. Look at our nation. On any given Sunday, less than 40% of Americans go to church. America used to be 92% of Americans believe in God. We are a nation that only 65% of people in America believe in Jehovah. 65%. If that doesn't shake you up, I don't know what will. If you're here tonight, we can pray for your family. If you're here tonight, and I challenge you to be the best husband you can be, the best wife you can be, the best father you can be, the best mother you can be, the best son or daughter, because it's up to us to rise up and stand up to make a difference. And that's what I want to challenge you to do to make a difference. Love your family and do what you can to let it be a good example. If you're here tonight and we can help you, why don't you come as we together stand and sing.